our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast, Rich Police Radio!
Hey folks, this is not a normal episode of Rich Police Radio. This one is guest hosted by my friends Sean and Todd McGinnity, who are the hosts of the Sean Geek and Fast Fret podcast. If you've been following my social media for the last little while, you may have seen that the Sean Geek show recently celebrated 10 years of podcasting, and I was a guest on that episode, and they've been on my show and vice versa, and they're part of this nice little community we've developed of Manitoba podcasters. And so whenever I need to have a break on the show or get some help, I always have a lot of resources within that community of people who want to help out and guest host an episode of the show. So on this one, they talked to two members of the band Crooked Ice. And Crooked Ice actually has another connection to the Manitoba podcasting community in that their bass player, Andrew, who's actually not on this interview, he is the host of local podcast Headful of Radio. And he's also a member of our community. He meets once a month with us at our podcast hangouts, which are open to anyone. We hang out, talk about podcasting, eat donuts, drink coffee. And it's just a nice little community event we've been putting on for a number of years. So there's all these connections of this episode, which is really cool. I'm not on it, but I'm here on the intro because I need to make you hear my voice somehow. Because apparently I can't stop talking at you. But I really encourage you to check out the Sean Geek and Fast Fret podcast. Check out, obviously, the guests on this episode, Crooked Ice. And if you're listening to this show or any episode of Witch Police Radio and you want to help support what I'm doing and what my friends are doing when they fill in with this project, you can go to patreon.com/witchpolice. And that's where you can, pocket change a month, whatever you feel like donating, you can get access to interviews before they come out as podcasts. You can get access to a bunch of bonus content. There's a monthly newsletter, which features a lot of information about local bands I've gone to see that month, side projects I'm working on. And there's all kinds of bonus content. There's hours and hours and hours of bonus content on there. And you can literally throw me a buck a month, and it helps keep the lights on, helps pay for the costs of running this podcast. But the good news is that Witch Police Radio and all these other podcasts we're talking about will be free forever. The Patreon is just there if you feel like supporting. So thanks again for listening. And here comes a guest-hosted episode of Witch Police Radio.
We've overtaken Sam's show. After coming on our show and celebrating our 10th with us, we wanted to have some tomfoolery here and invade his studio and take over his show, provide some quality entertainment on the Witch Police Radio show. Yeah, because Sam's a little lazy, we're going to just jump in and take over his show. We're going to interview two people that are adjacent to Witch Police Radio and the Sean Geek and Fast Fret podcast, which is where you can normally find Todd and us. We've had Andrew on our show, and we did a crossover promotion with Andrew promoting his Lyft album, which is the last Lyft album he did, which is fantastic. It was definitely one of my top picks, I guess, last year. But he has another band called Crooked Ice, and we are going to talk to the other two guys in Crooked Ice, the two most important members of the band. Could you folks introduce yourselves?
For sure. I'm James Deberson. I play guitar in the band. Partially write the songs with Andrew. I play guitar and sing. And
I'm Doss Palmer. I show up and hit things when they tell me to come.
Nice. I'm also a drummer too, so all of my questions are going to focus on Doss for sure.
There you go.
I'm probably going to ignore James completely, so I apologize about that in advance, but Todd's the guitar player, so maybe he's got some questions for you. So can you tell us about, so what is this band? I know there's a history to it. I mean, I know a little bit of it, but the Witch Police fans probably want to know a little bit more. How did this band get formed? What was the genesis of it? Why did you guys get together? Like, what was the thing that brought you guys together?
Well, Doss and I have actually been playing for 20 years now.
A long time.
Yeah. The band got together because of our little friend, Andy. He just kind of decided to text both of us one day and, hey, should we start a band?
I worked with Andy a long time ago, like 20 years ago, and I had been following his music for a long time and going to his shows, and we'd been in different bands for a lot of years and gone to a lot of shows together. And then finally the timing worked out that neither one of us were working on much, and it was like, well, I know a guitar player. and away we went, I guess.
Yep.
But I've known them both for a long time. I guess I'm the connector. I met Andy at work, and I've known James since forever, since he couldn't buy beer, since I was buying him beer.
Allegedly.
You know what? That's a drummer thing. I don't know how many beers I've bought for Todd. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's no, because if everyone else is drunk, the drummer always sounds better, right? Like, I mean,
that's right.
Philosophy, right? So.
Yeah, well, that's the key thing, isn't it? The more you drink, the better we sound. That's how far works.
That's our philosophy for sure.
You guys are really fast, yeah.
So I just want to touch on that. So Doss, you're saying that you were in some other bands with Andy. Wow, I got to start calling him Andy. With Andy before, is that true?
Oh, like, no. I've never been in bands with Andy before. That he's been in projects and I was in them, and we played.
I see.
Shows together, yeah, but we were always in other stuff, and then finally we weren't in stuff, and it was like, well, we should try.
Okay, yeah. So like, what bands were you in?
I guess just the one that I was in the longest before was called More Than a Hand, but that's been kind of defunct for a while. But it was like a two-piece
instrumental,
like kind of jammy stuff. Like,
was it a bass and drum or a guitar and drum?
Guitar, drum.
Yeah, he had. Matt Wirsch was the guy's name. He played through an Emperor rig and a bass rig as well, and had a big loop station, and he'd make big sound walls, and I just kind of jam on them, and we'd have hooks that we could come back to kind of keep ourselves in play. And sometimes it worked awesome, and sometimes it was terribly awful, and you know, that's how it goes. We put out an album in like 2012, I guess, called Neighbors. It's still on Bandcamp, I'm pretty sure.
I'm writing this down because I'm a nerd for local stuff, so...
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. Except when they missed a loop live, but
wow. Oh god,
it didn't happen that often though. So
yeah,
so it was very good.
I'm always interested in the writing process, because whenever, you know, when Sean and I were writing stuff together, there was a certain way that we kind of did it, and as we interview other people, everybody has their own way of doing it. Either they have a you know, just use their phone, and they, you know, wake up in the middle of the night, they hit the button, they just, you know,
yeah,
put a groove down with their mouth. And then the moment they listen to it, they go, what the hell was I thinking?
I've been there, definitely.
Or do you guys just kind of get together and just bounce ideas off of each other? Or you just kind of sit in the corner, you just kind of playing something, and he says, hey, what is that? And then they can just kind of join in with you. What's your process?
So early on, I mean, there's a couple ways we write songs. I think Andy and I are kind of the same on that. Either something just pops in our head and we have to write it down, kind of like that middle of the night thing. But a lot of our songs, we have a Google chat going. That's, I don't know, 10 years old now, somewhere around there. But we have a Google chat that we would come and jam. And then we go back and listen to the music, and Andy and myself would write to it.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do a lot of our stuff in Google Documents and just work it out from there.
Is that like when you say Google Documents, so something written, or is it like a Dropbox where you can put like audio or anything else in there?
Just written. So everything we've done musically, it usually came out of jams. So we'll have I have a jam space here in Selkirk, Manitoba, studio Pick This Production. And we jam in this space, record it, and then we'll go listen to it at work when we're supposed to be working.
Pretty much, yeah. Send timestamps back and forth.
Yeah, like, hey, yeah, I like this section here, and we'll timestamp it and send it to the other guy. And we're like, I think we can come up with words on this spot. And
so that's creative, like the three of you though, like in this chat, like, okay, yeah. See, I like that. Like, mm-hmm. Todd, like a lot of the other bands that we've talked to, there was always like a principal songwriter, or, you know, one person brings the idea and everybody works around that idea. But, in me and Todd's last band Dome, it was a four-way thing. Like maybe one person brought the thing in, but all four of us put the song together. Like it was,
yeah.
And writing parts and stuff like that. And it was like, it was the most creative I've ever been, because it really pushed me. If Todd's pushing me to do this, or the drummer's pushing me to do that, or the guitar player's pushing me to, like, whatever, like, so you guys are actually doing that. Like, let me tell you, it's actually kind of unusual, because a lot of bands, it's just like, I'm the guitar player, I'm writing everything, and that's it usually. Like,
I think we put our egos in check a very long time ago.
Nice. But that's good though, because the idea is going to form in a completely different way.
That's, oh yeah, our songs are, I don't know, to me they're kind of completely different from one song to the next, so it's pretty interesting.
I was pretty lucky because I started drumming. Well, I was playing guitar first, and then all my friends got way better at guitar than me really quickly. So I was like, ah, shit, I gotta do something else. So I started drumming, and had a roommate who was really into like playing tabs and playing songs off the radio, and so I got foundational stuff with him, and then I had a couple friends who didn't know any notes at all, and they just wanted to jam and make stuff up. So I was jamming halftime and learning fundamentals. And then being a drummer, it seems that there's always lots of people looking for drummers. So I got to play with a lot of people. I've been super spoiled. I never play alone because I've always had somebody to play with, like, really willing to jam like all the time. I realize that's like a huge.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's quite a thing.
Oh, you're spoiled.
I've had quite a run with that for sure.
Yeah, guitars seem to be more available, I guess. So I'm a guitar player, but the last two bands I've been in, I've been playing bass.
Yeah, that was just the last
just one, whatever they needed. So So I always have a bass on hand. You never know.
Yeah,
there's always a need for that bass player, right? Like always. Yeah. So can we talk about the studio little bit? Andrew filled me in a bit on the studio space there. It sounds pretty darn cool. Can you maybe talk about the history of the studio and how that came together? And
sure. Yeah, I started recording my own stuff early on, not doing a great job. So I took some courses online and stuff and just learned from people. And then all of a sudden, this person, Malcolm Jay in Winnipeg, he's a hip hop artist. I made a comment on one of his Instagram posts. I said, "Hey, this song's pretty good, but your kick drum's clicking here." I said something like that, and he came on and asked who I was and if I can come down to his studio. And then I kind of just caught the bug from there. So when my wife and I were looking for a house, we were looking for something with at minimum a concrete pad on it that I can build a small studio on. We ended up finding a place with a old 50s, 800 square foot house that we jam in all the time. And yeah, I built a mix room, a vocal booth, a practice room, and the room we're sitting in right now, our vinyl room.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow.
That's Todd's dream right there. I think Todd's I want to do that.
We have a whole house as a studio.
Yes.
Wow.
In my backyard.
In your backyard. So very this. Long. So when you say in your backyard, so this is a house, like it was a shed or it's an actual house that was.
It's a legitimate house from the 50s that was.
It's probably the original house.
It is the original house on the lot.
RTM was put here.
Oh, and then they built a newer house and then just kept the older house there.
Yeah, so this is kind of deemed unlivable. So okay. I got it, and like I put a lot of work into it, but yeah, it's at the point now where I basically have a second house that is just the recording studio.
Well, that's perfect.
Oh, yeah,
man. The floors don't do this anymore when you walk through it.
We
brace the foundation and stuff. So. Oh, yeah.
Does it have a basement? Or you're in the basement?
Kind of a crawl space, a third basement, I would say.
Yeah, and that's where you had to kind of brace things up a bit.
Yeah, that's where the ghosts live for sure.
So many more for you.
Are you running all the wires like in that basement, like kind of running everything underneath?
I did actually.
Nice.
Yeah, I piped everything through. I have a floor box at the right in front of the drum kit that I put my inputs into. It's really great, great space.
We should take him on a tour with the, yeah, with no, the it's... laptop.
I want to go out there and see what it looks like. I think that'd be kind of cool. Andrew's saying, "Well, come on out, Selkirk, and
yeah, come on out with Andy, have a jam with us."
Yeah,
so you have like a mixing booth where it's separate from glass from where you're actually playing on the other side.
Not quite that fancy, but I can hear everything they're doing. I can see into the vocal booth, but not into the practice space, the drum room.
Wait, so you can play live off the floor and record?
I can. I haven't done it yet. We've only done track recording, so we'll do a backing track, and then everybody takes their turn at recording onto that.
Okay.
I think with the low ceilings, it kind of makes it hard for really loud rock bands.
Ah, okay.
I could get away with it if I get a folk band in here or a soft rock band in here. But with our music, no, we couldn't do it live off the floor.
Because I know when Todd and I record and when we do our stuff, I always feel it's better if, like, not to begrudge anyone else in the band, but if it's Todd and I are jamming out, whether he's on bass, guitar, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I find the foundation of every song is kind of like just me and Todd live. And honestly, a lot of the writing that we do, that's how we do it. It's just like it's a live. Mm-hmm. Off the floor, and then we just, you know, punch up certain things, or, you know, that's the best.
Yeah, if you can play it all the way through live, that is the best recording you can ever do, especially if the two people are tight at playing, right?
Yeah. Oh man, that's cool. I want to go check out that place. So the Crooked Ice, where did the name come from?
We were just talking about this right before.
Where did it come from?
So there's We really want to ask people what they think the name is.
Okay, I like because that.
One of our songs. We were called Dark Stars.
Okay, now that makes sense because that's okay. So that was like Crooked Ice. Who the heck's that? Because Dark Stars was always the name that Andrew was throwing around at me.
Dark Stars was our name, but unfortunately, that's taken by like five other bands and one pretty famous band in Europe. So. We
jerks
scratched our eyes out trying to find another name.
So is this like, you know, those ice cube trays that you have for a couple of years, and every time you crack them, eventually, you know, the tray actually cracks and breaks.
That could be the album cover.
Where the crooked eyes came from, because you know, half of it.
I like it.
Yeah, like you're putting water in the tray, and half it's on the counter. Like you just.
Well, and there's cracks in a couple of the cubes there.
Yeah, and then there's a trail from the sink all the way to the freezer.
Yeah.
I'm just happy you didn't say anything political, because it has nothing to do with anything political.
Oh my.
Oh yeah, no.
No, we're not going there.
Yeah, nothing to do with any of that.
There's no ice. We're drinking meat.
So. Yeah, we're drinking meat.
Meat. Interestingly enough, there's a band called Crooked Dice. And when Andrew told me, yeah, I got an interview with the guys. And I mean, it was Andrew, so I wasn't really paying attention. And I looked up Crooked Dice. And Crooked Dice, there's another band. I think they're a rap band out there. So
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good.
I didn't know that till after we named the band either.
But that's okay. There's a differentiation. Our old band Dome, there's about 17 of them out there.
Yeah.
And even though we researched it when we put it out, all these other bands don't care that there's other bands called Dome. So, no. You know, you probably could have been okay with Dark Stars, but
I think so. I really pushed to be original.
That's cool.
So Crooked Ice wasn't taken anywhere. So we snatched it up.
Wow. So what do you guys do? Like when you're recording, do you have an actual board? Or are you recording from your computer? What kind of a setup do you have for that type of thing? Do you have like rack mounts with all this universal audio gear and stuff? Or
yeah, I have we have analog preamps for everything that go into a Focusrite interface. And then yes, everything gets mixed in the box like everybody else these days. So
yeah.
Cool.
So where was the most, like, where did you learn most of the things to do to record? Now, was it from YouTube videos? Was it from actual courses, or was it more friends that you knew that kind of helped you out that had already done recording?
Kind of a mix of everything. I learned on the fly for the most part. I've been recording myself since I was 13 years old on a little Dell computer microphone that's like that big, right?
Yeah.
So let's start off that, moving that on different places on my desk and seeing where it sounds the best. And
right.
And then, yeah, just working with people through the years. I used to record myself. My brother has projects all over too. I'd record him quite a bit. And then, when I wanted to get serious about it, then I reached out to people like Derek Benjamin, Privateer.
Oh yeah.
He's amazing. Really good guy. He helped me out quite a bit.
So wait, so there was no conflict of interest there? Like he just, hey, I need some help.
Yeah. Wow,
what a great guy.
That's he's awesome. He's awesome. Yeah. If people don't want to come out to Selkirk, I usually send them out to Derek.
Oh, that's important. Like, that's the thing about the Winnipeg scene in all regards, probably, I guess, even in the recording thing. I was wondering if there was any rivalries between studios or anything like that. But
not as far as I know. Maybe in the city, but I don't. People have perimeteritis, so people usually don't come out to out my way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a good term.
And perimeteritis.
I haven't heard that one.
Yep. Your next single.
Yeah. Here we go.
There we go. Yeah,
you can talk about how people are insular and won't leave their perimeter of their
lakes, where people
Well, your songs, I was listening to the one there. I mean, you're talking about Toonies and Loonies. I mean, if you're not from Canada, you wouldn't know probably what they're talking about.
I don't think that one's going to do good in the States, no.
Well, I don't know. The States talk about loonies quite a bit, so I don't know. Yeah. And I don't mean the change. Yeah. But no, honestly, though, so when I was listening to Loose Change today, I'm listening to it and I'm going, okay, some good Canadianisms. And I love a Canadianism in a song. I don't care what anybody says. I love. But then I was like from a songwriter's perspective, I'm like, okay, now loonies could talk about, you know, someone who's a little, you know, off center or whatever. And I was trying to think if I could come up with a something to use the toonie for. Is there something, another like a real world term this could be like a metaphor for or something? But I don't know, the song was, I wish I had the lyrics in front of me, and I don't know if you have them on your
it's on Bandcamp.
The lyrics are, you guys did up. Oh, here we go.
Wouldn't it be like a Looney Tune? So are you a Looney Tune?
I thought of that when I was rating it.
And a Toonie.
Yeah, the Looney Toonie thing kind of make me think of Looney Tunes for some reason. But no, that's probably the most political song I've ever written.
Sorry, I'm going through them now. Keep talking.
That's all good.
The lyrics.
Yeah, no, and I would say the songs themselves is probably half of them are written lyrically or written by me, and then the other half are written by Andy.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a preference when it comes to your instruments? Is it more like a humbucker, single coil, you know, Gibson, Fender, PRS, Charvel? I don't know.
I'm a Les Paul guy, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, humbucker, Les Paul.
And that's pretty much what you play throughout the whole, like, do you switch guitars at all, or is that pretty much your meat and potatoes?
For the album, for the recording side, when we were tracking, I did, the whole album is on the Les Paul, but some parts in there are on Takai Tele.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Takai Breezy Sound is what it's called, but it's a Telecaster. Wow. Just to get a different sound in there.
Is that like a layered guitar that's on top of the Les Paul then?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Now, is that an 80s Tokai or is it a...
It's a newer one.
Okay.
Yeah. Still made in Japan. They're beautiful guitars.
Wow. Yeah. I've seen a few Les Pauls like that and they looked really, really good.
The Love Rocks are really fun guitars.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've seen them, but I've never actually heard one live. So
I'm not they play sure. Great.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, they'll talk
about people. Todd grew up on a Telecaster, so.
Oh, yeah.
It was his first guitar he played.
Yeah. It was a copy. It wasn't even a real one. It was a Mansfield. It was a house brand out in, out east. And it was actually my uncle's guitar. So it was my first guitar was that. It was that and a Fender Bassman amp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the tubes were old. So, I mean, it didn't have
crackly.
Yeah. And the speakers were Jensen's and they had a bunch of Kleenex stuffed in the cones because they kept vibrating. Yeah. And every time we played, I had to take the power tube and I had to kind of wiggle it, just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah. And then you'd see the little orange glow and say, okay, now we're good.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, things you grew up with, you tried to make it work, eh?
Yeah.
So
in terms of studio stuff, I heard this story today, and I thought you'd find this interesting. There's a Peter Gabriel album, like his So album, and there's one track on there where the bass is so, you know how bass tends to have like a lot of resonance, and like you hit a note and just kind of stays forever. And Peter Gabriel wanted to get away from that. He was trying to find a way, like it's too much resonance. It's not what I want in the song. So the bass player in the band just had a kid, and he had nappies with him or diapers with him, and he actually wrapped the diapers around the strings of the bass to take some of that resonance out. Damn, and now I can't listen to that song. I can't listen to that song anymore. It's like I saw how the sausage was made. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I'll look it up here. I can't remember. I'm not familiar with that album. Somebody told me. to listen to So, because Eddie Van Halen listened to So, and it was like his favorite record.
Yeah.
So I get it. I'll look up the track. You vamp for a bit, Don.
All the best there.
So no animals in the studio?
Nope. No studio dogs unless I bring them in.
Okay. So you don't get extra sounds when you're recording?
No. The kids, the dogs, everybody's out when I'm recording.
Yeah,
I want to invest in a light.
I looked it up. Sorry, it was the song "Don't Give Up" with got Kate Bush on there too.
Oh yeah,
did they duet on that album?
Okay, I'll have to listen to that one later.
Yeah, nowadays we just have those fret dampeners. You've probably seen those. You wrap it around the head of your guitar, and it dampens the strings more for like metal music.
Hair ties.
Hair ties work too. Yeah, that's the old school way of doing it.
Yeah,
what Alex used to use.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, our guitar player.
Yeah, I was like, what is that? Well, that's so you don't hear the string noise.
Well, he was bald. I'm like, why are you carrying your hair tie on your guitar? Like, you know, what are you going to use that for?
You never know who you're going to meet.
Well, yeah, it's for the girl that's trying to pick me up after the show. Can we talk about the drum sound a little bit?
Yeah.
Nice. There we go. Synchronized too. Right on. So I'm a drummer. That's my first instrument, and I later became a vocalist. So when I'm listening to drums, and I learned how to play drums, I learned how to read music. When I played piano later, everything came from my foundational Carmen Appice drum instructional book with all the tabs and everything. And I learned how to read music through drums first.
Okay.
And then I learned piano, you know, 10 years after that. So I'm very visual with the notes and the placement and time signatures and stuff like that. And you were saying that you read, you're reading drum tabs, correct?
No,
God, no.
No. I started learning with a guitar player who was reading lots of tabs. So
I see. Okay.
He was playing lots of straight kind of rock stuff off the radio things.
Okay. Thus play me.
I don't know notes or tabs. I've been so spoiled that I've had people to play with all the time. So I was always kind of like, I was the first guy to buy a house in the group of buddies. So it became the jam house. So everybody would just show up all the time.
So how are you constructing your drum parts? So are you going to get it on the first try? So say Andrew's laying down a bass and then you're just like, following along, or are you just kind of following along and then then you're going back to it in your head, hitting the song the second time or third time? And are you actually like, how do you put your drum pieces together? And the reason I'm asking is because when I was listening to the songs, they're not straight ahead. Like there's stuff going on. It's not just AC/DC 4 on the floor. Like there's actually some, it looks like there's some thought put into it. Is that something you actually spend time putting together, or is it more of a feel thing where I'm playing with Andrew here or with James or whatever? Like how do you put that together?
That's a good question. This is Andy's the first bass player I've ever had, so I played with a lot of guitarists, so listening to Andy has been new for me. I just kind of have to play it a lot. Like it evolves over time, and I rarely play it the same way ever, which is drives them nuts, I'm sure. But we kind of keep each other honest all the time, you know. So it's like repetition, I guess. And I think about it a bunch, and I'm always kind of like trying to get beats out of me that I have. Like I'm always drumming on my desk and drumming in the car and trying to get these things out of me, so I'll just try to shove them into whatever they're kind of giving me at times too. Sometimes our songs start from the drum beats too. If I'm obsessively stuck on something, then they'll kind of work around me with it. I don't know, they give me total freedom with it. They're like, do whatever you want. So it's like I sit with them for a while, I'll listen to the tracks without drums and try to figure it out now and again. But we just get together and jam pretty regularly, and eventually it gets to a place where we're all kind of happy with it before we record anything. It's like usually been kind of hammered out for a while, you know, by then.
Yep.
What was your first drum kit?
My dad's old Pearls. They were like sparkle blue wrap. It was like a Pearl Jazz kit, like a jazz fusion. It had like a,
it looked like the President kits, but a little smaller.
Yeah. Would have been from, yeah, back in the day. That was when I bought that house. I threw all my boxes into the living room and drove straight to my parents' house and got dad's drums and set them up and had a party. And then I unpacked later.
So you didn't just decide to play drums. This was in the family already.
So I always wanted to play the drums and my mom wouldn't let me. I knew dad had a kit, so I never played them. I looked at them in the basement, like in the crawl space. But I come from a pretty musical family, like lots of piano and guitar and singing and whatnot. But yeah, my dad was a drummer, but I've never seen him drum. So
yeah, mom probably didn't like the loudness of the drums.
Too loud.
Yeah.
Too loud for Pam.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds familiar. I didn't get started. Like, I didn't really start drumming until I was like maybe 23, 24, I guess, when I kind of really, really got into it.
I will say, though, without any formal training, like, he has some of the most unique rolls I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah. That's what I noticed. It's like you're not just playing, like there's more going on. Like that's why I was asking if you had like if you're reading music before or something, because you're not just playing. Like there's like if you listen to like Van Halen, for example, like every solo he has, like there's a story. The solo is its own story within the song, right? So like he's writing a story within a story. And I feel like you're doing the same thing with the drums. You're not just, well, I'm not going to play the part. Like I'm actually writing a part. And a lot of drummers don't write. They're just playing.
Don't toot his horn too much.
Easy.
I'm not, he won't let it go after this.
I like to keep it interesting too. Like I try not to fill the same very often either, which probably drives him a bit nuts, but.
No, I love it.
And because like my previous band was quite improvisational, so yep. It was like I was just like get lost in it and see what comes out. And
well, yeah, when you're playing as a two-piece, you can't just play the drums because there's some dead air to fill if you only have two instruments. Yeah. It teaches you to write on your instrument.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he'd lock in a loop, and then I'd have that loop to play with for as long as he left me there, basically. So it would be, if it was really working, then he'd just let, I could build on it. I could get my foundation kind of sorted and then see what I could add in without losing it type thing.
From what I remember, there's a lot of, like, reverse beats and stuff.
What does that mean?
Oh. See?
He just knows how to do it.
He just knows how to do it, reverse beats.
That's cool. I hate you because you're intuitive. I had to work hard at my craft. I had to read the Carmine a piece drum book and listen to him drone on for
4 hours.
And, all right, guys, we're gonna do a paradiddle here, and then we're gonna put it in a side shuffle, and then we're gonna go into a nice jazz 1960s jazz beat. Are you ready? Like 4 hours of that guy going on. Let me tell you. See, that's why I get the accent. I know his voice better than I know my own brother's voice. Crazy.
Yeah, can we talk? I think that's the same thing for me too. Like I never took any lessons either. I started with drums and then I branched out into everything else and now guitar is my main instrument. But never a lesson.
Is your family music, the same?
Yeah.
Same as DOS or did your mother sing, dad play guitar?
Like yeah, dad played and sang and was in bands in the 80s in Manitoba.
Oh.
Oh, crap. We probably saw one of those bands, Todd.
Maybe.
Todd, I was going to say, too, your fundamentals are probably way better than mine is the thing. I have trouble playing four on the floor. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
I have to be keeping my own time and my own weirdness, so.
Well, if you ever want
to for learning that,
if stuff. You ever want to borrow my Carmine a Peace book, I got it in the shelf here still.
It would drive me nuts. I would have a hell of a time trying to figure that out.
Yeah. If we're playing Tom Petty or anything, this guy just loses it on rolls. So.
Yeah.
So this the Finch of Wolf Island, like, what the hell is this? So I'm like, what the hell kind of title is this? And then I'm like, so there, but then, you know, I listened to it like a bunch of times and I'm like, okay, there's a lot of stuff going on here with this song. And it, at first glance, it's like, that's an interesting title. And then I was going back to Peter Gabriel. So, because he had this obsession with birds and bird sounds and stuff. And I'm like, is there a correlation here?
No.
and then I'm, you know, second listen and third listen, I'm like, that's a catchy fucking chorus.
It is.
it makes sense, but it doesn't. But that gives it kind of a uniqueness, which is kind of cool. You talk about how that song got put together.
Yeah, it's really silly, actually. So, you know, when you're scrolling on your phone and you're you just find these random news articles and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I hate to tell you this, but that song is literally about a bird. It's a
metaphor. Like, you could there's metaphor all over the place.
Literally no metaphor to it, but there could be a million that you could make out of that song. Yes. No, it's literally about a vampire finch. If you want to look that up later or right now, if you want. Yeah, it's about a vampire finch it's a bird that needs another bird to come to the island to feed off of.
Oh my God.
For some of its food sustenance.
Super metal.
Super metal. Oh yeah. Hence the guitar riff I wrote.
Holy, this guy's scaring me here.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, these pictures are horrific.
Do they have like fangs or what's?
No,
they're just like, I'm gonna eat this other bird right now.
And they're not very big.
Like, and they actually don't kill the other bird. They just pluck at its feathers till a little bit of blood comes out, and then they feed off the blood. But if they didn't have that bird coming to the island, they'd probably die off. So I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, so I think this is a metaphor. You said a bird coming. I'm hurting. I just heard Burton Cummings. So I think there's a metaphor to Burton Cummings in the Winnipeg music scene and how it seems to always revolve around Bert. Bert's the guy, but I think you guys are trying to equate him to this Finch, how he's getting all the accolades and all the press for the only thing that ever came out of Winnipeg, because there's never been, you know, there you go. There's your story in the next interview you do.
I'll steal it from you.
Good to know.
Because it is definitely just about a bird.
what about the highest perch? So what's up with that one?
That is, it's so funny because I don't like politics, but I wrote a couple political songs, and that one, I mean, it is, as you imagine it, it's about mutiny. So taking down the higher power. And as I was writing it, I was thinking about pirates and stuff and all that. So, it's just a song about overthrowing government, basically. I don't condone, but
I do.
There you go. Yeah.
I like it. You know what, Todd, what the hell we were just talking about? Was it on our anniversary show? We're talking about pedestals. I don't remember which show we were on. We're talking about pedestals and all this sort of thing. And that's the first thing I thought when I saw highest perch. I'm like, oh, is this someone on a pedestal? Someone that needs to be knocked down? Because on our Dome album, we have a song about pedestals and people that are put on pedestals and who built the pedestal that the person's on, sort of thing. Like, what's the foundation of that pedestal? So, the pedestals in everyone's music. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Like, my favorite line in that is, how deep is the water? Are there sharks below?
I couldn't make out all the lyrics. Lyrics are the last thing I always go to, which is why I'm going to them now. I always listen for the, and I don't know if you guys are the same, but when I listen to music, it's all about the mood of the song.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the lyrics are incidental, but
I don't look up lyrics till way after either.
Oh, no,
that's the drummer in you. Cause I didn't know most of the lyrics to these songs until we recorded them. And I was like, oh, that's what he's talking about.
We've played these live so many times, and he didn't know the words to any of them.
Oh, I didn't need to know the words.
Join the club, James. Todd has no idea what any of my lyrics are.
There you go.
Thank you. Okay,
even all dome tunes, it's whatever. it's the feeling, the music.
Yeah.
The words are like, what's that Icelandic group that it's just all O's and ahs? It's not lyrics. It's just a mood.
Yeah.
It's just more of a mood that it creates. You're paying attention to what they're saying.
Todd's going, what's that pedestal song Sean's talking about? I have no idea what this song is talking about.
I'm going to check that one out after.
We have a song about a bird?
There we go.
Oh, when he said pedestal, I thought maybe there was another bird one.
Doss, you and Todd can fuck off right now. Me and James are going to talk real quick. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. No, this is good. And trying to keep with Sam's format. So this is the end of the time. You guys want to give us some socials? How do we find the band? You got any shows coming up? What's up with you guys?
Yeah, so I don't know when this episode is going to release, but hopefully our album will be out when the episode releases. That will be May 15th.
We'll release sometime just before May 15th.
Okay, so that's our album release. Our album release party will be June 4th at the Osborne Tap House, so nice. Thursday, June 4th. Our handles, I think we're Crooked Ice Band, at Crooked Ice Band on Instagram, and then Crooked Ice everywhere else. We have a link tree right in our bios everywhere. You can get all of our We'll be pressing CDs. If you want to grab that, we got our CDs already. Yeah. So those are fresh. Nice. So we'll have those at the show, and then we're actually pressing vinyl.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. Vinyl's coming back.
I'm going to transfer you because I want one of those for sure. Anything
for local. Sure. I'll get one for you.
Awesome. And then, there's also that Andrew guy. Do we want to talk about him at all? Or do you know any shots you want to take? Here's your form.
That was the time.
I don't know. Tiny Andy? I don't know.
He's got way more online presence than me. I know I shouldn't talk anything.
He can bury us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. He's a force of nature. I've gotten to know him. A force of nature for sure. I'm just going to spoil things here, Doss, but he did ask me to replace you in the band. No, I'm just kidding. Well, he's been bugging me. He's been bugging me to come out to Selkirk and just jam with you guys or whatever. But
oh yeah, that'd be great. Anytime.
I'll bring my kit. We'll do a double kit jam.
Yeah.
Nice. So I get two kits.
Double kit jams in this space before. Nice. It's been really fun.
Yeah, I've been since I had my kids. I've been kind of like a little bit distant with playing. Hopefully, as the kids get a little bit older, I can open that up again. I'm dying to play. I just gotta find
the free days. It's hard, but
yeah,
we all have kids too. It's just finding those free days.
Yep,
for sure. Friends with somebody with a studio.
Yeah,
it helps.
It helps.
Yeah, that's what I need.